This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. When Beverly Scott took the job of general manager of the MBTA almost a year ago, she joined us here on Radio Boston. She was new to the job, optimistic, and compared the country's oldest subway system to a fine-aged wine.
Writers might say aged, yes, but is the nation's oldest subway system like a fine wine? Probably not. However, last week, the State Department of Transportation released its big five-year capital plan, which rethinks the region's transportation infrastructure. It includes many items for the MBTA, more subway cars, a new Indigo line to Alston and Cambridge, and the fabled extension of the Green Line to Somerville and Medford. And also, this spring, some of the T's most popular lines will stay open until 3 a.m., so a lot to discuss. Joining us now is Beverly Scott. She's the Chief Executive Officer and General Manager of the Massachusetts Bay Transport Authority. Beverly Scott, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Pleasure to have you back. And listeners, if you have questions about the MBTA, now's your chance to ask them. Call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at Radio Boston. Well, Beverly Scott, let me ask you with just a simple question. What part of the five-year capital plan excites you the most for the T?
Oh, I tell you, that sometimes I get torn, but not too much. It's really the focus we've been able to put on state of good repair, and that's really the heart and soul is being able to put reinvestment back into the existing system, which is substantial. So I always system preservation, state of good repair. So what are we talking about? Those orange and red line cars, you can't do it. You can't do it if you know orange and red line cars, basic bus replacement, ability to be able to wind up doing the invaluable work that we need to do in terms of signal and power systems. So that's the most exciting part to me, and to honestly be able to stabilize this operating budget, okay, which I don't want to, fool anybody. I mean, it's a journey. There's still much more that's needed in terms of funding, but literally to not for really about a five-year period of time, what we've been able to do with the investment is that we will, in fact, wind up being able to stabilize on the operating side of the house, which makes it possible for us to not be constantly in this, oh my God, I'm getting ready to totally cut service, ratchet everything up, can't, and so that. Now,
so
at
let
the
me
same
ask you, though,
time,
let me, if I may, okay. So are you saying that we could potentially be looking forward to an MBTA where just about every year we're not getting a budget that's submitted that's got a $160 million deficit in it?
Well, let me tell you that up and for the next 5 years,
okay
we're going to want, but once again, this was, just being candid, this was not the total funding that had been requested. It's roughly about half of that. And even if we had had the total funding, that still would not have been an inoculation for life, if you will. But very much, it's put us on a much more stable footing. So it's given us an opportunity. It's about $3 billion that we're going to wind up having in terms of ability to be able to really put some big investments in and then also be able to make those targeted investments in the future, if you will, that are also important.
Well, we'll talk about those targeted investments in a moment, but we just got a tweet from Nate Burnett, who tweeted us at Radio Boston. His question actually ties together two issues. I love this question. How is the extension of subway hours into the night, though that 3 a.m. Extension on Friday and Saturdays that's coming this spring, how is that going to affect maintenance and reliability of the trains?
Okay. That's one of the reasons why, aside from the fact that it's a pilot and we've gone out for Friday and Saturday, quite candidly, we do not have the capability in the system to wind up being able to go 24/7, nor would we, in terms of maintenance window, be able to wind up doing that same type of extension to wind up taking it during the week. And so we came in, there's no question but that we absolutely believe that there is more than just a market that's there, but very much to Nate's point, quite candidly, we could not not only responsibly nor safely wind up trying to move this up beyond the Friday-Saturday window that we have.
Okay. So you talked about targeted expansions to grow the system, and some of them are quite exciting, Indigo Line, Green Line extension.
Oh, I know.
Which I know residents of Somerville say, yeah, we've heard that before.
It's real. It is absolutely real. So the Green Line extension, in fact, we're also thankfully, because of, if it weren't for the funding that took place in the transportation legislation, we would not have been able to really be able to move that project forward. But it is honestly one of the most heavily utilized areas in terms of transit ridership. There is no question but that it is a very, very worthwhile project. We will, in fact, wind up bringing that project up. And the other thing that the funding has done, where we're totally committed to the project, it's a $1.3 billion project. Without the funding that we got for this, we would not have been able to leverage this project to go for federal funding.
Right.
So we're going to try. We are trying like heck, and it's a very meritorious project to wind up getting what we hope will be 50% federal funding for that, roughly about $674 million, which
you
would
hope.
Come out. We hope. Okay, yeah. We've got to compete. But let me tell you, if you can't show that you have the ability to maintain what you have, you can't, and you have to be able to show a 20-year financial pro forma, if you will. If it hadn't been for getting the transportation funding legislation, it would have been lights out. No way that we could have even begun the gauntlet of trying to get the additional 50% from the federal government.
So what about those neighborhoods that don't currently have subway or light rail service, and what they're dependent on are the buses?
Let me tell you, bus replacement, I call old bus the Rodney Dangerfield of transit. That's a service that
any respect.
I know, don't get no respect, but carries most of the passenger trips in North America. And even for us, a third of our ridership utilizes bus on a daily basis.
I know the 57 well.
I'm the one in the 55. Those are mine. So when we talk about state of good repair, making sure that we make those absolute essential investments into replacement and upgrade, if you will, of existing equipment and buses right on in there. Just like Orange and Red Line car replacement is critical, making sure that we wind up keeping our bus system in a state of good repair is also at the top of the list for us.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot more. We're gonna hit all the sort of parts of the system here and get a bunch of calls in as well. But I have to ask you, the capital plan is exciting because it's the state saying, here's our vision. This is where we want to put the shovels in the ground and where we want to put, you know, wheels on the tracks.
Yeah.
But the long-term challenge of the MBTA, as you well know, is that, you know, once we get the new system up and running, can we pay for its operation? I mean, capital expenses, capital spending and operations is different, and there's a gap between the two, and that's been the persistent challenge here.
Absolutely, and it's a challenge that candidly, I wish I could tell you somebody has really figured the way out of this, but let me step back and say this. There is no question, and that's why I say, this was never an inoculation for life, okay? And so all of us being able to really come to grips with understanding what does it really wind up taking in terms of investment in the system, but I'm going to give this one to you. I want us to change our lexicon, okay? Because it's not a cost in terms, it's an investment in terms of public transportation and infrastructure. And so one of the things I've been saying is that I can't tell you it's going away. It's only it's a matter of who pays and how we invest. So I'm going to suggest this. Being able, mobility and access are absolutely critical to every single critical outcome and link, okay? Mm-hmm. We're talking about jobs creation. We're talking about economic development. We're talking about healthy communities. We're talking about healthy lifestyles. We're talking about sustainability and energy independence. And so when we begin to change the manner in which we view what we're talking about doing and see all those outcomes and connections to the things that make for the quality of life and economic competitiveness, then I think that our public really walks with us in a different way. And so what am I talking about? I don't want to be up there talking about fare box recovery ratios. And it's not that they're not important and that we should, in fact, we absolutely have to be productive, efficient, but it is a bigger piece than that. So I'm hoping that what will happen, that we together, is that now that we're not in a period for the next 2 to 3 year period for sure of what I call just the roof is caving in, we got to jump there, is that we can take the time to wind up being able to keep the commitments that we've made and at the same time begin to change the manner in which we think about and in which we look at the importance of making these critical infrastructure investments, because they're not, they do not run themselves.
Well, Beverly Scott, this is a bold and bracing vision, because as you well know, I mean, the things, I'm not going to descend too far into transportation wonkdom, but things like farebox recovery ratio, debt servicing, et cetera, that has been the albatross around the MBTA's neck for decades.
I know. And so what we want to do, and I'm not trying to be, you know, but think about it. We want to wind up, hold us absolutely, and anybody that sits in these seats, absolutely accountable for productivity and efficiency. But let's twist, let's think to ourselves and close our eyes and say, but if we do not have a top-notch, world-class system that permits us to be able for people to move and for commerce to move as well, what is it that we're giving as a legacy to ourselves? Okay. So to me, and I, you know, that's the buy, that's the ask, that's the investment. And we have, unfortunately, because we are bricks and mortar and vehicle and parts that move and all of that, we're so often talking about the wonky stuff or that and not talking about the outcomes that are absolutely critical.
Well, let's talk to some of your writers. Listeners, we're talking to Beverly Scott. She is the general manager of the MBTA. You can call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. Renee is calling from Somerville. You're on the air, Renee.
Hi.
Hello, Renee.
Hi, how are you? So my question is, you know, like the Green Line extension will be a big investment in the community, and we wanted to make sure that part of that investment get to the resident of good local job during the construction phase of this project. We want to make sure that the mistake of the Fairmont Line are not repeated here in Somerville, and the resident get an opportunity to improve their life and don't get displaced from this project. So I'm curious how we're going to make sure people are going to get access to those good jobs that the extension of the Green Line is going to bring to Somerville.
Renee, thanks so much. Beverly Scott?
Okay, Renee, and it's such a pleasure. Okay, well, actually, we've been working with Renee and some other members of the community to try to actually wind up with shaping what will be beginning a pilot for what we'll call a localization program, if you will, recognizing, okay, and it's the community of Somerville, it's the communities of Medford and Cambridge, those that are going to be impacted, but to wind up building a program, and we're really utilizing a and in fact, we had some members of the community who were able to go with us. We took them out to Denver, to the Denver RTD, because the federal government has helped to fund a program there called the Denver WIN, Workforce Initiative Now. And it's a federally assisted project, just as this one is. And literally what it has done is to do exactly what Renee is talking about. It is not exclusive. And so I don't want to suggest at all that there's a local quota but there is definitely a focus on, for those areas that are impacted by a project, for them to in fact wind up having special assistance so that they in fact are able to participate. So we're we've been sitting down at the table with Jobs for Somerville, and in fact we're expanding that to have some other communities as well that are impacted to help us to come up with a good model for that.
All right, let's move to another community. Sandy's calling from West Roxbury. You're on the air, Sandy.
How do you do? Good afternoon.
Hi, how are you doing?
Fine, thank you. I am calling, however, in regard to the number 51 bus. That's 51.
Okay.
That runs from Forest Hills to Cleveland Circle. I'm sure you know it well.
Oh, well, I know of it. That's it. Okay.
And what's your question about the 51, Sandy?
Okay. We need for 4 years I've been calling your company to try to expand the evening bus. The last bus out of Cleveland Circle back to West Roxbury and Roslindale is 10 o'clock at night.
Mm-hmm.
That is no value to students who are in night classes, to medical personnel, to nurses. You cannot survive that way.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
there has been no attention paid to that bus. It's a main trunk line back and forth from Forest Hills to Cleveland Circle.
Sandy, let me take it from you there. Beverly Scott. Sandy, first of all, thank you for your call. Beverly Scott, I mean, I think Sandy's actually hitting on a point that we just began to talk about, because bus service, in neighborhoods like her that she's talking about, it's not going to be what gets the Friday-Saturday late-night extension.
And no, it's not going to wind up getting that extension. But let me also come back, and so that we can all be very clear about what we funded and what we didn't. What was funded was really a capital program. What was not funded was a bunch in terms of operations, okay? And so let's just be real, real clear that what the authority is going to have the ability to do, and I tell you, I look at and hear all of the cries for significantly increased service, overcrowding, later night service, add additional routes. And so what we literally wound up funding, and it was all good, okay, but that was not what wound up becoming, MBTA, now you have $200 million more per year, and I'm not trying to be funny, to literally wind up being able to answer those calls. So that what's happening right now is that in most instances, what we're having to do is to really realign the decks on the chair to say, well, how do we wind up taking very, very limited resources on the operating side? Now, let me go to the late night service. That's one of the reasons on that pilot program that literally winding up having sponsorships. And I have to say, the Globe was the first one that walked out as a platinum sponsor for $500,000. Okay. Is that that's one of the keys on that being a pilot program. And we're really very much going to wind up having sponsorships to support that.
Right. I'll take your metaphor of the rearranging the decks, the chairs on the deck, not to equate the MBTA to the Titanic.
No, we're not the Titanic.
Well,
that's it.
Let me ask you a question about commuter rail, because
yes.
you recently made a very big recommendation that was agreed upon by the MBTA board as a whole to transfer the contract for the commuter rail to the French company Keolis.
Yes.
Single largest transportation contract for them in the country, but one of the biggest that the MBTA has, potentially, what, $2.7 billion over several years. My question for you is, obviously, commuter rail has had its fair share of problems. Keolis, its contract allows it to take some $70 million less in profit than it otherwise might. And that's raised some questions for people wondering, like, what does this mean? Like, do you have concerns about that?
Well, first, I would say that there's nothing that was established in terms of what a profit margin would be. Okay. And so to say that they took $70 million less, anybody could have put it in and put whatever they felt was a profit margin that they wanted to. I personally prefer to have you keep your profit down and wind up putting that into my service. Okay. Because at the end of the day, the cost to operate the service is critical. We wound up on having independent work that was done much before this procurement even began, which were independent cost estimates, no different than you would do on an engineering project or whatever, to say what is actually reasonable cost for a project of this nature. On top of that, we will honor 70% of a project like this is in labor. Infringe. Mm-hmm. And so we honor and require the contractor to honor the existing labor agreements in terms of, yes, okay, so you can't come and you're going to take the existing workforce and you're going to assume the contracts that are in place at the point in time that
right.
you wind up coming in. And you can negotiate around some terms outside of the core terms for the future, but really, for the most part, your labor and your fringes are locked in. So we were not concerned.
Well, here's why I ask.
Forgive
the interruption, but here's why I ask. Because the T has had trouble before with low bidders. Like, for example, when First Transit several years ago put in the low bid for the ride, they pulled out of that a year later, saying we can't honor this contract. Same thing with actually the commuter rail. Bay State Transit in 1999 had a maintenance contract that was given to the lowest bidder, and that company ended up saying that it was incapable of fulfilling the terms of the contract. Do you have any concerns about that regarding
I don't have any concerns about that, and quite candidly, relative to Keolis, and I wouldn't have had any concerns about it relative to, we had two good teams, both of them world-class organizations, and quite candidly, both of them extremely close in terms of their pricing relative to each other and their pricing relative to the independent cost estimate. So I have no concern whatsoever as to whether or not there's been placement or padding, if you will, in the, quote, wrong places. But more than that, just unerringly, the just how close everything is was on the numbers
okay,
for this
Okay, we're bearing down on time. We've just got a tiny bit left, but I want to sneak in one last
okay,
call here.
Get me.
Paul is calling from Cambridge. Paul, quickly, what's your question for Beverly Scott?
Hi, very quickly. I was wondering if you've considered distance-based fairing, such as they have in the District of Columbia, and if so, why you concluded that it doesn't work for the T?
Oh, it would. Okay, so let me tell you, the being able to do variable-based fare, we have a Scheiten-Bachmann system. The current system does not, that we have, really does not have the functionality to be able to do distance-based. It would, however, in terms of, potentially in terms of time of day or some type of maybe premium pricing. So absolutely, I am, in terms of future, next generation, there is no question, but we want to be able to go full, have the full toolkit, which would include the variable-based pricing for distance. But we do have some things that we could do with some enhancements on the existing system to wind up getting us to an element, but that would only be the time portion, not the distance.
Couple quick questions just to wrap up today. Joe writes on Twitter, what are your thoughts on yesterday's No Pants Sunday?
I don't have any thoughts on that. None whatsoever. But I will tell you what I was totally thrilled with. I'm going to be a go, Pats, go. Okay. it was wonderful. Okay. I tell you, I just sat up there and I said, and I'm going to tell you, for the next one coming up, I got family in Denver. Okay. And so I just told them they might as well get ready to square off because I got my stuff on and they'll have to have theirs on.
You are a true fan. Well, Beverly Scott is the general manager of the MBTA. Always a pleasure to have you. Come back again soon.
I promise I will. And to everyone, thank you for all of your support. And we serve with pride, and it's just an honor to be here.
Well, keep sending your questions, listeners, by the way. We'll try to get them to Beverly Scott. We're at radioboston.org. But for now, stick with us because a new research project by Boston doctors aims to better understand the flu using home test kits. We'll find out all about it. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty with Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.